Genesis chapter 12 is the focal point today, and talking about Abram. And his work for the Lord. And how would you feel today if someone came to you and said, didn't ask you to leave or move, but said, I want you to pack up all your belongings and go somewhere else?
Well, if it was then, I'd say, I'm going with you.
That's good. It depends on who it tells you to go with.
Golly.
Holy.
I'm like,
bitch. I don't
want to
go. Sometimes I wish I could.
Yeah. True, because what challenges are, I mean, not using our family, but our youngest daughter, they just moved to Auburn. But if you move, what do you face? Number one, it's an unfamiliar place. You don't know the area. You don't know any people there. And changes.
You lose your comfort zone.
But does God ever call you to make a change in your life because of Him? Because of something He wants you to do? And can that challenge cause you to have to stop and think, do I really want to do this? Or do you ever feel like God is saying, I want you to do this, but you're saying, I'm not ready? And He keeps knocking on your door until you finally not give in, but you answer His response with a positive note. Because sometimes we have to face difficult situations and changes in life because of circumstances that maybe God does place in our life. It would be nice if life was just calmness and peace every day of your life, but it's not that way. But we study Abram. If we read the first three verses in chapter 12, it says, the Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Then we studies and all we know. Abraham, at this point in his life, was a very affluent person. Let's say he had worked hard. He had gained a lot. He had riches. Stating he's still living, quote, in his father's house. So why do you think God would pick on Abram and ask him to move on my behalf?
I think he knew he was someone he could depend on.
Mm-hmm.
He was someone with faith.
With faith.
I think he was a great leader, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was only a few people that really trusted in God and followed him. So Abram was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew Abram's heart that he was willing
to go.
He would be obedient.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what
he was influential that people. He was somebody that people needed.
Do you think Abram had any anxiety about this?
Yeah.
Sure, he did.
I mean,
he was 75.
Yeah, 75 years old.
I was having this discussion yesterday. I love kids. I love grandkids, great-grandkids, any kids. I'm 51. I don't want a baby to have to get up and change diapers anymore. I hope the Lord doesn't tell me 75 I'm going to have kids.
Normal stuff that we think about having to do to move, and know it was different, but like
you know, it's interesting though. I don't remember all details of it, but one of the things when I was studying doing the class on Genesis, it said that there are records, and I don't know where, that say that basically they were Abram and his family were merchants, and that was how they had amassed so much wealth. So they were used to moving around.
Well, that's true.
And their home base was in the Haran, I believe, where it was.
Mm-hmm.
But they would travel around. So really, moving wasn't
new
as
to
foreign to them as it is us. Now, you know, like I said, I can't remember enough about that class because it's been a little while ago. But they were kind of nomadic by nature or whatever. But still, you're leaving your family. And at that age, I mean, you have Asian parents and other people that you care about. It would be kind of hard to.
Mm-hmm.
I know when my mother and my brother moved up to North Carolina, that was really hard on me, you know, seeing them go up there and knowing that I wouldn't be able to just go see them, you know, any day I wanted to.
But along, like you're saying there is, you talk about coming out of your comfort zone. I mean, we don't know what Abram was living in, this household, let's say, but you think about as far as the line of heritage goes, he was, if his father passes away, then he becomes the top dog, let's say, the top man, and he inherits his father's rights and privileges. And now God is wanting me to leave all of this and be a nomad and wander out. He's going to tell me where to go, but I'm going to live in a tent. I'm not accustomed to that. But, and I think through life, have we ever gone through a situation in life or what we thought was suffering, or we didn't know how we were going to come out of it, but in the end, it turned out better than we thought. We survived. And why? Was it because of our faith in God? I'm sure a lot of that has to play with it. Was it him maybe sometimes teaching us a little lesson? I need to get your attention. Draw back into me. But what would be some difficult things today that God could call you to do? What if he called and said, you know, Susan and Oliver, I want you to pack up everything and I want to send you overseas to a foreign country where there's no electricity, no running water, and I want you to go and be my missionaries there?
We have to talk. But that's the biggest thing, though, is what you just said and then what just off the top of my head I said is obedience.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling me something. So I have to make the decision, and, you know, we don't all make the right decisions. We would have to make the decision that we want to obey what he's telling us. Otherwise, I'm just going to stay here and live in my house so I can turn the water on when I want to. And that's our biggest thing, and we're all guilty of that. We don't listen to him, and a lot of times we don't obey him. I mean, we've all had opportunities that we might should have. Now you look back, and if you'd have been obedient, you might be in a different situation today. Because, and I don't think it's a punishment, it's just a choice. So we would have to, you know, that's the biggest thing, is the obedience. And, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes I think, you say, okay, was that really God? I'll wait and see. If he says it again, then maybe.
I can say from experience, though, that when God put something on your heart to do it, if you don't do it, you will be miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will be, if you're a believer, you will be miserable outside of God's will. And because I've been there, and it's not pleasant.
I was thinking about that this week when I
turn things over to God. Mm-hmm. It's the hardest thing in the world, but when you do, it's the biggest blessing you're going to have. Because
we still are guilty about, I can manage on my own. You know, I'll be all, I can, we can do it by ourselves. I mean, like Betty says, it's hard to let go. I mean, it's hard for people to admit they made a mistake and say I'm sorry. So, you know, by not obeying him, you tell him you're sorry because you didn't obey him.
But if he told you, speaking to you, that I'm going to make you a great nation, I'm going to bless you, would that kind of pump your ego up a little bit? Make you, or there again, would you question, you know, why me? Like someone said earlier, Abram was an obedient servant to God, so why not choose Abram to use him as a vessel to show other people, if you believe in me and do my works, these are the things that can happen. Because success, what does success mean to you? I mean, do you look at success as being wealthy and having a lot, such as in Abram's case, he was successful? Or is success leaning towards and bearing upon doing what God instructs you to do in your life and following his teachings all your life? Does that make you successful?
I think you have to distinguish individually between worldly success and spiritual success.
Yeah.
Because everything that we do, it falls into one of two categories. And I always say this, if I've said it before, forgive me for repeating it, but everything that we do, it falls into one of two categories. It either has temporal value or eternal value.
Mm-hmm.
The car we drive, the home we live in, the things that we do, the prestige that we have, who we are at work, in our neighborhood, in the church, whatever, these things have temporal value. 100 years from that, it's not going to matter
at all.
Nobody's even going to be talking about what you drove, you know, 50 years or 100 years from now. But how we live, the people that we led to Christ, the people that we were compassionate to, the people that we helped feed, the people that we ministered to when they were hurting, those things are going to have eternal value because it will have been a ripple effect that would have touched lives of other people. And maybe there are people that'll be in heaven because of something that we did. That's success. Mm-hmm. And to me, really, you know, that's the only success that matters, because that's the only thing that's going to go with us when we leave this world.
Yep. And
but yet then, Jesus made us an image of him and give us a brain. And so the success that we have here on earth and the success that we have for everlasting life, if you blend them together, they work together. If we use this for that, right?
But we have that tendency to use this for us.
Uh-huh.
And
yes, I know what that's like.
One for me, one for God.
Well, some people, when they get so successful, they think they've done it all by themselves.
Right.
Yeah. They forget God on the way. But if they don't forget God on the way, because
right.
they did give them that brain,
mm-hmm.
and.
Well, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with what I'm saying is, it's what you do with it. Whether
yeah.
you have a little or whether you have a lot, what you do, is it temporal? Which, I mean, we eat, we wear clothes,
right.
we do these things, we need a car. These are temporal needs that we have, and they are important, and I'm not
mm-hmm.
trying to diminish that. What I'm saying is, though, on the grand scale of things, what really matters, and we can put everything that we do into one of two categories. If
mm-hmm.
the Lord bless us with much, if we give to the church to support the church, we give to support missionaries and things
right.
like that, we talk to our neighbors, those things are more important because they have that lasting value. Whether we drive a Toyota Corolla or whether we drive a, you know, a BMW or a Lexus, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you got the money to buy a BMW, that's fine. But I'm just saying, it's what is our main thrust? Is it for us, or is it for God? That was the point I was trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand.
Sometimes I'm not that clear.
Yeah, because the writer points that success goes beyond achieving prestige and wealth. rather it involves completing the task that God assigned to the individual. So, you know, in Abram's case, and we'll see. Now, in the verses here, he's telling him, I'll bless you, I'll make you a great blessing, and then I'll bless those who bless you. But then also I will curse those who treat you with contempt. Because do you think God in his infinite wisdom knew, I'm sending Abram out, there are going to be people that are going to mock him, they're going to curse him. So those that do that to you, I'll deal with them. You don't have to worry about it. Now, getting back to going overseas and being a missionary, you know possibly you're going to be treated that way. Do you go with the hope and the wisdom and the understanding that somebody may talk to me face to face and tell me I'm wrong in what I'm saying? Am I to take that to heart and let it just bother me? Or do I go back and I get on my knees and pray and give it to God and let him deal with that person? I don't have to worry about them. All I can do is pray that God will change their heart. Well, I'm sure.
So it's the same thing with him. I'm not, you know, don't you think that they felt like here he is just pulling up roots and he's going to wander and wander and wander and, you know, they're going to make fun of him because why would you leave whatever he had? Because it said his father's house, so you figure if Abram was very successful, his father probably was too, so they probably didn't live in a dump. And so he's leaving this house and just going, like you said, being a nomad. And people are just thinking, if I could live in that house, you know, I sure wouldn't be wandering in the dark. But he's kind of like Noah. Yeah.
But you go back, he hasn't told Abram where you're going. Mm-hmm. Would you want to know, well, where do you want me to go, Lord? First. Or God just tells me, go. And I will bless you. Wherever I lead, wherever you go, I'll bless you. Because we'll see in verses 4 through 6, it says, so Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. He took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people he had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. When they came to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the site of Shechem at the Oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Now, did Abram think Canaan was the place to be? Is that why he went there first?
Don't you think the Lord gave him some direction? You just don't pick up and don't you think he told him something? Or do you just pick up and decide?
Well, then, verse 1, he says, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you.
But you know, because you put us all in a group, and you told us, okay, we're going to leave today, get your stuff. We're all of us, we'd all think of different places to go. You know, I mean,
be like herd chicks.
Yeah.
That's right. I'd be like, well, I want to go this way, and you want to go to the beach, and to the mountains, and to the... So... What about all these people he took with him? Don't you think they were saying, where are we going?
Do you think they trusted him?
God was telling them to trust in him.
Yeah.
Because we've already talked about several of these things, but the difficulties Abram faced, first off, was his age. He's 75 years old. You know, I hadn't hit it yet, but I could think, what if God spoke to somebody in here today and said, go.
He lived longer, so 75 wasn't all that old.
But, I mean, we're just using relative terms. Usually at 75 years old, you slow down in life, you quit working, you've taken it easy. So would that be a difficulty for some 75-year-olds? Some, their health would not permit them to do it. But He's leaving his lifestyle. We talked about that. He's leaving his comfort zone. Would you want to give up everything you've got?
Not really.
Not really.
Well, there's a simple solution. Get rid of everything that you own, and then it won't be a problem.
So then when he said you're going, fine, I can.
The pictures of family, but, and that, yep, those kind of thing, your Bible and go.
Another thing, I guess you wouldn't have your daddy to tell you what to do.
That's right. And thought about that. But what about leaving and going to a foreign land that you know nothing about?
Probably wouldn't speak the same language.
Languages. He's taking the people with him. So naturally they trust him. Hopefully they trust him. It does. I can't pull that. It just says he had substantial material wealth, including the people he had acquired. They were employees and servants. It doesn't give a number. But later on in reading, it's talking about when they set up and planted their tents, or Abram put his tent down. I thought there's a number, but we'll find it. I mean, later on it just says his servants set up their tents, and that later he had filled an army of 318 trained soldiers. Now, where they got that number, maybe that was the number that he had.
He could have picked some up on the way, too.
That's possible. Very possible. But everywhere Abram went, and let's say made campsite, he built an altar to God. Why? Why would he do that? Did God instruct him to do that? Or is Abram doing that out of his servant responsibility to God? This is my way of showing you I still place my trust in you. I still have my beliefs in you.
Well, and if I could just say travel during the day, I mean, we mm-hmm.
Because it, using Abram as an example of faith, are there risks today that we take in being faithful to God? Are there risks imposed upon us because of our beliefs? And do we see that getting a little more and more pronounced and acknowledged, that more people are questioning our beliefs?
Well, nowadays, if you're Muslim or anything but Christian and you want something, it's like, oh, well, you know, like people praying in the workplace like 5 times a day. It's like, oh, well, you know, that's his religion. But let you walk in there with the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned through the years, Oliver's work, the years for the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, they don't serve in the armed forces. And their reasoning is because their agenda is all over the world. And so they don't want to fight brother against brother. Well, for us, they're Christians all over the world, too.
True.
But that's one of their beliefs, is that they, and so they don't have to fight. I mean, they live in a country that's free like us.
Kind of like on.
Conscientious objector. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If anybody's watched that documentary that Ben Stein did a few years ago, Expelled. If you have internet at home, you can pull it up and watch it for free. It will show you that all of these scientists that are rejecting Darwinism, it's not being tolerated. They're losing their jobs and being kicked out of the universities. And that's what university is supposed to be about. It's about questioning. And true science, and this is what some people don't realize, true science is not, you know, okay, well, we have enough information over here. Anything outside of this is unacceptable. True science says you're constantly testing things. If you come up with new information, then you take that new information and then you can apply it and test other things by it. And it's a constant state of learning and exploring and that kind of thing. But yet, if you question Darwinism, especially if you mention the word intelligent design, that you lose your job. And I mean, we don't, even in Christian universities, I think Biola, which is the Bible Institute of Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken, they fired at least one professor. Baylor fired a professor for it, and other areas have done it. And we think about these the bakeries that have been under such assault from the homosexual movement because they refuse not to serve people, but to do the cake, something they can go anywhere else and get it done. And I think as we get further and further along, it's growing. It's growing. It has an insatiable appetite. And I think we need to be prayerful, and I think mm-hmm. we need to be aware that one day we may be called to make a choice that's going to cost us, and even could cost us our life.
Because after arriving in Canaan, the Lord appeared to Abram, and he told him, I'll give you this land to your offspring. So he built an altar here to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now, we step back. How do you think Abram felt when the Lord said, I'm going to give you this land to your offspring? And Abram's thinking, I don't have any children. What's up? What's coming next? You know, what's the next surprise, Lord? We don't get into that today, but we know the story. His wife Sarah, who couldn't conceive, gave them a child. Now, is that a blessing to Abraham? Is that God's way of showing, there again, you've been faithful to me, but is it God saying, Abraham, you've been faithful to me, and I want this to continue, so I'm going to bless you with a son who will carry on your works.
But then what about if
Abram didn't question him to start with.
But we
I know.
I mean, be honest, when you've got three children and two pieces of candy, what about me? Which one gets the candy? We don't get. So he said he's giving it to his descendants. First off, he didn't have a descendant, that's true. But second off, it doesn't say anything about Sarah, you and Sarah, it's just your descendants.
Mm-hmm. Because going along with that thought, I mean, from Canaan and knowing Abram, who was a shepherd and he had flocks of sheep and goats, did he stay in Canaan? No, he moved around. He moved to Shechem. And then he moved later on southward, between Bethel and Ai. But everywhere he pitched a tent, he built an altar to God. And I know we mentioned that earlier. Do we tend to forget God in our lives? If God blesses us with something or takes us from a situation and takes us out of it, do we just say thanks and move on? Or do we go even a little bit further and do something special for God and remember Him or remembering us? And I ask this kind of lightly. Is it easier or more difficult to follow God the older you get?
The older you get, easier it is to follow God. More faith you have, I think.
think quicker to look back at the blessings that we've received.
You've experienced.
And, you know, when you're young and parenting and children, and the time seems to just be, whereas when you begin to get older, you seem there's more downtime.
A lot more downtime. And you start when you're young, you come in from work, you start with the kids, and from there you got to clean and...
Then get your baths, go to bed, and then you got all day to sit there and pray for it to get dark so they go to bed. I think you have a rebellious, I don't want to say rebellious, a more rebellious spirit when you're young, because the psychology of it is when kids get into those preteen years and they start looking at more at what their friends say, and that starts becoming important to them. Mm-hmm. And then as they grow in those teen years, it's just a natural thing. They're trying to kind of find themselves, because, you know, they're trying to find out who am I and what, you know, what is my place in the world. And they, while they still listen to parents and what we say to them heavily influences them, they may for a time kind of rebel against it, because it's like you've been instructing them all their life. Now they want to see what else is out there. And I think, you know, once you kind of go out there and you kind of, you find out, you know, you understand who you are and your place in the world, or at least what it seems to be to you, you're not as defensive. You're more open. And I think if you, you know, as a Christian, it becomes easier and easier, because we realize we see... Our, how has God led me from here to here? Can I trust Him? And the more that we see that God is trustworthy in our life and He seeks our best, the easier, and with every step, it becomes easier to follow Him. If we're submitting to Him and surrendering, at least for me, because, to be honest with you, I don't depend on myself. I need Him. I make too many bad decisions.
Well, I ain't never seen Him. Teenager Ken didn't know it all.
Yeah, that's what they'd have you believe.
The thing about it, where it's so good for, I think everyone in this room has had the blessing of it. All our parents brought us up in churches. And if we do get a teenager and do our thing, think we know it all. 99.9, if we brought up in the church, we'll go back to
that. Not anymore. Not the statistics show that's not true, because the culture we live in today is different, the society. And so many of these young people, when they're going, and it's not, there should, we were blaming the colleges for turning them against God.
Well, statistics
show we're losing them in as early as junior high and elementary school now in the church, because we're not adequately... We have more access to more information today than we ever have in history. And we're teaching kids the story of Noah, but we don't teach why the flood came. We just teach this nice cute little story about Noah and building the ark and all the little animals came and went on. Yeah. And that's where we leave it. And then in the same thing with a lot of these other, the historical stories from the Bible, we're not really treating our young people that they're intelligent enough to really understand God's word, or that there's judgment. And what happens is when you teach it as stories and not historical fact, then they go to the secular high schools and colleges and whatever, and they're told, well, the fact is Earth's millions of years old. Well, how many churches are covering scientifically, historically, and philosophically why the book of Genesis is true? We're not doing it, so we're not equipping them. So when they leave, the ones that do come back, so many of them are saying the only reason they came back is because they want, it's kind of a, well, I grew up in church and it was nice. I want my kids to learn the morals. I want my kids to learn the ethics of it. You know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And yet they are not... The parents that come back and bring their kids back, they're not, it really doesn't mean anything to them other than the fact they want their kids to grow up having some morals. And that's what they're saying. They're just not saying the church, they're saying it to other people.
Well, I know one thing. There was a teacher at AUM when my daughter was out there, tried every way he could to convince her that Genesis wasn't what it said it was. And it was rough.
But are we impatient?
Are we what?
Impatient.
Oh, yes.
Do we? You know, okay, God, you're going to be good to me. If I'm good to you and I do this, you're going to be good to me. When? What are you going to do? That's the kind of world we live in today. But kind of like Ken said, how do you tell someone that waiting can be a benefit? How do you tell this young teenager, this person who has just graduated from college, and they're wanting to start out in the world up here, that it doesn't happen that way? You know, you've got to work yourself up, and it may take 10 years, 20 years, 30 years to achieve that goal. But how do you teach them to wait? Because that's like Ken said, I can see it with my grandsons. They're in tune to their iPads. It's an instant world. And if it's not there, why isn't it there? And, you know, you're having to teach them, you know. I try to. Let's put that thing down. Let's leave it alone. But that's their world is, you know, the other day one of them was at the house and something he wanted. And I said, well, we were at my mom's house. And I said, well, Ma doesn't have that on her computer. Well, we need to get it. You know, I've got it now. Why doesn't she have it, you know? So how do we tie all this into Abram? Is being patient, being a servant, you know, work towards the goal, not expecting the goal to be there to start with and enjoy it the rest of your life. You might know the rest of the story, but you don't know what path you're going to take to get there.
Well, you just
the bumps.
Have faith.
Patience is a big.
Well, you think about little kids anticipating Christmas morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the rest of us. I mean, you know, how many of y'all get up at 4 o'clock just because you're too excited?
Yeah. Not anymore.
I get up at 4 o'clock. I don't care what's under the tree.
I go to bed at 4 o'clock because you have to put them together, and then they're all at 5 o'clock, and you're just like, I don't really care.
If the rooster's not crowing, don't wake me up.
That's right.
But you know, it's funny what you were saying about kids, that instant.
Yep.
Right now. You know what's really funny, though, is when you tell them to clean their room, do they jump up instantly?
No.
Or if you tell them to go take the trash out, you know?
No.
I mean, it's funny because it's just a kind of a reflection, but we apply it to others and everything else beside ourselves, and even as children, it's like it applies to everything but me. You know, I'll do it when I feel like doing it, but, you know, you should jump right now because I want
they,
it.
And they watch you,
yeah.
So they react the way.
I think we need to teach them that, you know. That's one thing I like about, I think, you know, teaching kids to go fishing. I think that really helps to teach them patience, you know.
We've been there, done that, too.
Yeah, because they do. They will get impatient. I mean, you know, you give them a rod and reel. There's
hopefully
no such thing as letting it sit out there.
Because our youngest one, when we went fishing, our youngest went mother caught the fish and yanked it up, and Cooper backed up and he said, "Why didn't you explain all of this?"
Yep. He didn't.
Precious. I love it.
Yeah. Miss Lee. Yeah.
That was a good lesson.
Thank you.
Well, we had fun this morning.
Okay, stand up.
He's up.
Don't pay her. She's loaded today.
I bet she's loaded today.
She's loaded for.
Yeah, she is. Betty had fun Friday, so
we just. Good.
Let's remember to pray for our church. We need it so badly.
Yep.
Pray for one another. Pray for our leaders. Betty's going to preach.
Well, no, I'm just getting a prop.
Okay, let's have our benediction. Thank you all.
Yes, ma'am. Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.